You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second of two podcasts on pulmonary hypertension in interstitial lung disease, hosted by Med Learning Group. This two-part series is titled, Are You Up to Date in Best Practices for PH-ILD Screening, Diagnosis, and Treatment? The program is geared towards members of the multidisciplinary care team who manage patients with PH-ILD, including primary care providers and internists, pulmonologists, cardiologists, rheumatologists, advanced practice providers, and others involved in managing PH-ILD. In this episode, we'll be talking about current treatment options and the role of the multidisciplinary care team for patients with PH-ILD. My name is Chris, and again, I'll be the host of today's podcast. We're glad to have Dr. Nirav Shah back with us for our second podcast. Dr. Shah is a professor of medicine, assistant dean for medical education, and clinical chief of the Division of Pulmonary, Critical Care, and Sleep Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Dr. Shah, it's great to have you back for our second podcast on PH-ILD.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be back here as well.
So in our first podcast, we discussed screening for and diagnosis of PH-ILD. For this one, we'll begin looking at treatment options. So let's dive right in right there. Up until recently, there hasn't been an FDA-approved agent for PH-ILD. So what off-label approaches have been traditionally used all along for it?
So Chris, there are a lot of therapies for pulmonary hypertension that have been evidence-based and really kind of have been successful in our patients with PH as pharmacologic treatments. These include phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors, endothelin receptor antagonists, soluble guanylate cyclase stimulators, prostacyclin analogs or prostaglandin receptor agonists, and activin signaling inhibitors. And while these have not been indicated in patients with PH-ILD, a lot of healthcare professionals have been routinely using some of these therapies off-label for the treatment of PH-ILD. But as we know, the evidence has been varied and the efficacy has been not clearly defined in this patient population.
Okay, so in terms of FDA-approved therapy, we now have treprostinil, which was approved early in 2025 for PH-ILD specifically. What did some of the study data on this particular agent show that eventually led to its approval?
So the study name for this one, Chris, was INCREASE, the INCREASE trial, and really it met both its primary and secondary endpoints. So when we looked at INCREASE, basically what they were looking at was inhaled treprostinil versus placebo in patients with PH-ILD. And what they found was that they looked at the 6-minute walk test distance from baseline to week 16 in meters. And what was that change? So in the inhaled treprostinil group, they found an increase in the peak 6-minute walk test distance from of 21 meters at 16 weeks, whereas the placebo group actually had a decrease in their 6-minute walk test distance by 10 meters. So that was highly significant. So definitely an increase versus a decrease compared to the placebo. And then when you looked at secondary endpoints, one of the really important ones was occurrence of clinical worsening or any event that would be considered clinical worsening. And when you looked in the inhaled treprostinil group, it was an N of 37 or 22.7% compared to an N of 54 or 33% in the placebo group. So again, a significant difference in the two groups of any occurrence of clinical worsening. When you looked at kind of this difference of 6-minute walk test distance of inhaled treprostinil versus placebo in the INCREASE trial and looked at that 16-week spread, you could see that really the separation started almost immediately. And while it wasn't as dramatic at week 4 and at week 8, there definitely was this big difference between week 16 inhaled treprostinil versus placebo. So this has been kind of what we've looked at. And then when you look at kind of lab testing and you look at NT-proBNP, there was a mean change of 15% lower N-terminal proBNP in the inhaled treprostinil group compared to placebo, which had an increase of 46 in that group. So definitely significant both in the 6-minute walk test distance as well as in some of our lab testing, particularly the NT-proBNP.
So with the constellation of off-label classes you mentioned and now FDA-approved therapy, are there any management algorithms available for clinicians that go step-by-step, starting with pH assessment and then recommending the use of certain therapies under certain circumstances?
Absolutely. So it depends on which category you're looking at, right, for which organization. So there's the European Society of Cardiology, the European Respiratory Society definition of pH, and then the sixth World Symposium on Pulmonary Hypertension definition of pH. But if you take these three groups, pH with a mean PA pressure greater than 20 or PVR greater than 2 Woods units, pH with a mean pulmonary artery pressure of greater than 20 with a PVR of greater than or equal to 3 Woods units, or pH with a mean pulmonary artery pressure of greater than 25 with PVR greater than or equal to 3 Woods units. You take these three groups and you say, all right, let's look at these three groups of patients based on the society and let's assess them for contributory factors. Do they have hypoxemia? Do they have nocturnal desaturations? Do they have obstructive sleep apnea? Do they have heart failure? Let's consider them for referral to an ILD or a PH program. If you know that they have severe PH, you may want to directly refer them to a PH program. But in this patient population, you're going to start to think about, is inhaled treprostinil a good option based on the INCREASE study? And so those patients, we're going to try inhaled treprostinil, unless it's contraindicated. We're going to refer them to transplant evaluation. We may consider them for a trial of sildenafil, but these are going to be patients that you want to take down this algorithm and say, all right, I think that they have pulmonary hypertension based on my testing. I know we have this option based on the INCREASE study to try inhaled treprostinil. Let's try it. Let's make sure we're assessing for contributory factors. Let's make sure we're making the proper referrals to either transplant and or pulmonary hypertension and manage them accordingly.
All right. So Dr. Shah, we now have FDA-approved therapy and several options that can and have been used off-label and now some, you know, a management algorithm to kind of guide clinical usage of these agents. What's the long-term outlook for these patients? Does ILD progression generally remain stable across time, or does it tend to remit and relapse? What are the resulting implications for treatment over the long term of these patients?
That's a great question, Chris. And I think we're still gathering data to answer that question. But when you look at kind of the data that we do have so far, patients with ILD without pulmonary hypertension typically will have a relatively stable course. If you have pulmonary hypertension and ILD, you can have these phenotypes of disease progression. You might have long-term survival, patients that survive greater than 8 years, medium-term mortality, those patients that are deceased within 4 to 8 years, and then some patients that kind of progress pretty quickly and have short-term mortality, meaning that they died within 4 years. What's important is to know that early recognition and activating kind of your entire resource pool to be able to determine whether the patient qualifies for a medication, gets the right follow-up, and is monitored pretty closely, those are going to be the things that are going to help us try and shift people from one curve to another. So from short-term to medium-term to long-term survival.
One of the things I don't want to get lost in this discussion is the treatment and the role of comorbidities in this whole thing. So we talked about the treatment of PH-ILD itself, but what are some of the comorbidities associated with PH-ILD that are important to consider in the overall picture and management of these patients?
That's a great question and something that I think we really do need to focus on. We need to think about acute and chronic infections in these patients. We need to think about venous thromboembolic disease like pulmonary emboli in these patients. Things that can confound our situation for our patients like obstructive sleep apnea, cardiac disease, lung cancer, depression. And then I want to take an especially particular moment to focus on gastroesophageal reflux, something that I think is ubiquitous. Almost all of my patients, in fact, probably all of my patients, I really focus on reflux precautions. So I think about elevating the head of their bed at nighttime so that they're sleeping on an incline, not with pillows, but with either bed risers or a wedge. I think about not eating or drinking anything for 2 to 3 hours prior to bedtime other than water so that everything that is in the stomach can move past there and cause less reflux at nighttime. And then for a lot of these patients, we're going to talk about modifications of the types of things they eat that could aggravate their reflux. And we're going to talk about potentially even treating their reflux with a PPI. So you want to make sure you're thinking about these comorbidities because they can really confound the picture and they can really be, if you will, low-hanging fruit to be able to take care of these things so that they don't augment or exacerbate how patients feel with PH-ILD.
So it's good that we now have a FDA-approved therapy for this condition. Now, in those taking inhaled treprostinil, how do you differentiate, you know, potential treatment-related side effects versus worsening disease?
That's a great question, Chris. I think effective side effect management, along with kind of a clear mitigation plan, is important to ensure kind of success for patients. And we as clinicians have to be able to to differentiate between treatment-related side effects and symptoms of worsening disease. So oftentimes what I'll tell my patients is that some of the treatment-related side effects are going to be things like a cough or a sore throat, occasionally headache and dizziness, maybe some shortness of breath or blood thinning sputum. But really, symptoms of worsening pulmonary hypertension are going to be worsening shortness of breath, an increased need for oxygen. You should not see that with the treatment itself. A decrease in activity tolerance, things like syncope, worsening edema or fatigue, and even hemoptysis. And so while we think about this, it's important for the clinician to be able to kind of differentiate and tease out which one is treatment-related side effects versus what's worsening pulmonary hypertension. For patients that are experiencing persistent side effects, it's imperative that we review kind of the device preparation and steps for delivery technique as our first initial mitigation strategy, and then think further, is there something we can do to kind of mitigate some of the side effects versus differentiate them from signs or symptoms of worsening pulmonary hypertension?
So you just mentioned a couple of things. You know, there's GERD, there's cardiovascular conditions. Data show things like depression and anxiety might be involved with PH-ILD. Let's talk quickly about the team members involved in the care of PH-ILD. Other than you, a pulmonary specialist, who else is often involved and what might be their roles?
Yeah, this is huge. So I'll start with first making diagnoses. So we definitely rely on our multidisciplinary conference at the University of Maryland, which involves radiology, pulmonology, pathology, to help make that diagnosis of, does this person have interstitial lung disease? Do they have pulmonary hypertension that's confounding it? We also rely on our clinical nurse specialists, our occupational and physical therapists, and our rheumatologists, because a lot of these patients have autoimmune diseases as well. So we really focus on a team approach to taking care of these patients. We can't do it alone. The patients really benefit from having these different minds and experts in different fields kind of help them. And it really creates a real teamwork approach where the patient is at the center of the team with all of these other folks helping them achieve their goals. The other thing I'll think about in a lot of these patients is going to be things like palliative care, symptom management. A lot of these patients have symptoms that really affect their quality of life. So getting folks involved early is really a big deal.
So in the couple of minutes we have left, let's just conclude with some final thoughts. Summarize a little bit about what we've learned and kind of where we go from here with the treatment of PH-ILD.
Absolutely. So PH-ILD is, as you all know now, a multifaceted condition, and it has a lot of symptoms. It has a lot of burden, both kind of physically, economically, and even the mortality is much higher than ILD alone. While the pathophysiology remains incompletely understood, we know that there are therapeutic implications, and now there's the first kind of FDA-approved therapy that's out there for PH-ILD based on the INCREASE study showing that inhaled treprostinil makes a difference. So what's important to know here is we've got to think about our patients with ILD. Do they have PH or not? Do they qualify for advanced therapies? Make sure we're thinking about their comorbidities along the way so that we're treating those or at least keeping an eye out for them. And then, while there are several therapies available for PH, and a lot of them may be ineffective for PH-ILD, when it is indicated, make sure we're getting our patients approved for inhaled treprostinil, because this has significantly shifted the treatment landscape for PH-ILD. We're looking forward to more therapies in the future, but it's really important to make sure we have a low threshold to determine whether PH is complicating our patients with ILD and whether they rightly should be put into this algorithm that we talked about earlier today.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Shah. I'm glad we could spend a little time talking about management of patients with PH-ILD. But that's all the time we have today. Thanks again, Dr. Shah, and thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. If you haven't listened to the first podcast in this two-part series, I invite you to do so. We discussed several concepts around screening for and diagnosis of PH-ILD in our first podcast. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. The CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, United Therapeutics Corporation, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.